Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. We're back. Hump day again. Caitlin, you're always with us on hump day. Thank God. For us. I don't know about for you.
I mean, yeah, it's always like kind of like the grimace.
Why is news. That?
Like, why? I have no idea. We recorded on the insurrection. I can never stop thinking about that. Like, okay.
You're just sort of like looking like, is that how? Oh, they broke in. Oh, they did break in. Okay. Wow.
That,
or at least timely episode.
I was not on the pod that day. I was not on the pod that day, but I'll never forget, like, I was watching it happen because my mom had called me to be like, are you going to watch the certification? And I was like, I guess I will. I'll put it on in the background. And then, like, they kept cutting away from the certification to be like, strange activity outside the Capitol. And then I came into our office and I was like, Danny, something is happening. And he looked at me as if, like, he was like, okay, whatever. And I was like, no, you have to, like, get off the computer and come into the living room and see what's going on.
I know, yeah. Like, people that obviously this affected everybody, but, like, I knew when people, like, that don't work in news or politics were like, how am I supposed to work the rest of the day? And I was like, I got a lot of work ahead of me today.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, explain what the fuck just happened. Off.
Yeah. I had, like, I had no chill whatsoever once they, like, breached it. I was like, what in the world? I was completely arrested. I could not do any work.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate that there wasn't much work that I had to do at the time, but I was basically, like, I remember seeing, like, someone put a chart on Twitter, which is, like, productivity and, like, coup. And then you just see, like, it, like, literally fall off the chart. And you're like,
oh,
accurate.
My God. It's so
accurate chart.
Crazy. Because remember, like, the months and weeks leading up, like, coup was very present, the idea of a possible coup. And we're like, no, there won't be a coup. It's going to be an intense day. Everybody's got to be really careful. But because of what we'll talk about today, little did we know that Facebook was not bothering to tamp any of this down. They took the brakes off after the election. So the coup was being planned the whole time. I like this reflecting on all the historical events over 2020 that we, or like early 2021, that we just completely blacked out.
Yeah. I was just talking with friends about those, like that week where we were waiting for the election results and everyone's brain was like completely mush.
Yeah. I did whatever I wanted that week. I like drank at weird hours. I smoked at weird hours. I did whatever I needed to do. I really hoped that week we would like find out the winner while we were on the podcast. But it ended up being on like a 70 degree Saturday, which was even better.
It was beautiful. That was beautiful.
I mean, I felt very comfortable that Biden had already won. We were just waiting for the pieces to be like verified because everyone was holding off in a way that was, I'm going to be honest, like in previous cycles, if someone had that margin, it would have called it. It was only because Donald Trump was going to be the worst person about this that they didn't call it when, like, you could have called it, like, Wednesday and been like, yeah, this is kind of over. And any other time it would have been
What's
called.
So interesting and that I didn't realize this at the time was that Trump people knew that because these Stop the Steal groups started organizing on Facebook the night of the election. Like the night, we remember that first night, the night some of those states finally flipped over and we were sort of like, oh, okay, I feel like this, that's when that started. So they knew, everybody definitely knew for sure. So we're going to get into some of what Facebook knew leading up to the insurrection, how they could have maybe taken steps to prevent it. Elise and I sort of primed our discussion about Facebook for today, yesterday, as like for how it's sort of different from some of the revelations earlier. But this is just sort of the most like primary documents, I'd say, the most primary source material we've had on Facebook yet. It just so happens that a lot of like the speculating and reporting was accurate. So maybe this doesn't come off as much as a blockbuster, but these are some pretty huge revelations. So we will talk through some of them today. These have been creatively named the Facebook Papers. I feel like there could have been a cuter name. I thought maybe like the Zuck Puck, like he's getting hit. The Facebook Papers.
I would wish that Mark Zuckerberg's name was in there just because Facebook is trying to change its name now.
Right. That's excellent timing. That's excellent timing for sure.
They are.
So when PR is bad, just pretend you're a different person.
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait to see what name they come up with for their metaverse. I'm sure it's going to be totally dystopian. So what happened was Frances Haugen turned over all of these documents. Mainly, I believe they were like screenshots is how she got them. She just took a bunch of screenshots on her computer. She turned them over to...
Screenshots are forever. It's just funny.
I know.
The screenshots would be what took Facebook down.
That's so true. Next week, they're going to like reveal something where like screenshots don't work at Facebook HQ anymore. Like you can't add, like the keyboard shortcut just does not work. So she turned these over to the SEC, to Congress. I think she talked to Parliament like yesterday. All of the news organizations basically agreed together to give themselves a couple weeks to go over everything and publish everything Monday. So they were like, deal, none of us will break these scoops until Monday. I think the New York Times broke the embargo and went ahead and did it. The Wall Street Journal had already had some of this information. This is like boring journalism stuff. But the idea of like every media outlet independently working to like on the same story based on the same documents just sounds very fun to me, like behind the scenes. I don't know. I think that says more about me.
There'll be an Oscar-winning film about how it all went down at some
Pentagon
point.
Pentagon Papers.
Exactly. That's true. Exactly. Every time.
Yeah. So there will be something in all of our... It'll be like later, though, so Timothée Chalamet will be like an old man in it. It'll be his next prestige project.
For sure. I'm going to go through sort of three big bombshell headlines that stood out to me. So the first one is that in 2019, Facebook employees created a profile for a fake person named Carol Smith. So we talk all the time, except Carol Smith. We all know Carol. We all know Carol. Carol, the fake user, she liked pages like Fox News and Donald Trump, and she like also liked content that told the platform that she was into Christianity and parenting. We have said before that we know many people who sort of just used Facebook from this point of view, just maybe like gently, well, I don't think you mean gently conservative anymore, just sort of like conservative curious, and then suddenly became a QAnon. And this sort of maps how that happens so unwittingly for the user. That's what stood out to me from this, is you sort of assume like, okay, Carol must have clicked like on some sort of wild post that then Facebook maybe took as, you know, inflated the significance. But no, not at all. So like I said, she just followed pages about like Fox News and Donald Trump. Within 2 days, she was being recommended QAnon conspiracy pages just based on her liking those things. I mean, now we do very strongly associate Fox News and Donald Trump with like QAnon, but like it wasn't always because the jig is up, but there was a period.
It didn't have to be that way.
It didn't have to be
that
way. Right. There were probably like some 2016 Trump voters who, but for Facebook, might not have been interested in this type of content. And they were not. So like I said, Carol didn't join any of these groups. Facebook was like, you interested in these crazy theories? You think maybe Democrats drink kids' blood? And she's like, no. So you might assume she would no longer see content about those conspiracy theories on her feed anymore. No. Within a week, Facebook's algorithm had still populated Carol's newsfeed with groups and pages that had violated Facebook's own rules, including those against hate speech and disinformation, and things that she did not even want to see. So everything about the algorithm was driving this lady, Carol, to QAnon. And like you fast forward to what happened in 2020, and you just imagine how many people like this was their path. And it's not hard to hold Facebook directly responsible for what we've seen happen.
Yeah, the big bummer to me is that like basically an expressed interest in like Christianity and parenting will also help get you there, which I think is how we've ended up with, like, so many, like, moms who don't want the vaccine, and that it's, like, you know, people can be casually interested in things that seem kind of innocuous or whatever, and Facebook will lead them to extremist stuff. I mean, Donald Trump and Fox News, it's like, okay, maybe Carol was going to see some of this stuff, but, like, it's parenting pages that will get you there, too. Or, like, just being like, I'm a Christian, which, like, shouldn't necessarily lead you to QAnon conspiracies about how Democrats
exactly make babies.
Like, that should be something that you can say on Facebook without, you know, necessarily being fed, like, violence.
How does this, Caitlin, how does driving people towards this type of content, very plainly, why does Facebook do it? How does it help their bottom line to force people towards this type of content?
I mean, one of the things that all social media networks want is more attention. It is an attention economy, and they succeed off of keeping you present and engaged. Happiness is actually really bad for attention. Like, you feel contented and then you're like, that's enough. And then you go and you do something else. Like, when I watch Great British Baking Show, I'm just happy. And then I think about, like, maybe going and baking.
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing. I don't know what's going on with my brain, but I find myself being like, oh, that would be nice. Maybe lemon bars or something. And then I think about being a productive human being. Instead, Facebook wants people to get enmeshed in emotions that tend to feed on themselves. You stoke people's fear. That's a form of anxiety. They're looking for security. You know, that old adage, misery enjoys company. Like, people will stay on these networks. They'll look for people who validate their fears and distress. They want places where they're accepted and where these thoughts that maybe are relatively new but feel very strong need some echoing back at them, so they feel like what they're experiencing, what they're thinking is meaningful and valuable. And so, you know, there's also absolutely no downside to fucking over marginalized people. There's never been. And because there's no downside and there's never any cost, I can't stop thinking about the AI engineers who were pushed out. I think it was actually at Google. But, like, the AI engineers and the diversity issues that these groups have in developing artificial intelligence, where there's this insistence overwhelmingly from white dudes that there is no racism in the AI, which is, like, if it's mapped on a human brain in any way, shape, or form, unless you solve the racism problem, you haven't solved, you just mechanized it. You just mechanized it and you've made it even less personal. So understanding that something is hate speech, like, there, in some ways, like, I think that this was inevitable because, again, there's no penalty for harming marginalized people. So it's naturally going to increase and encourage people who are empowered to get further and further down these holes where there's almost benefits to getting people in the majoritarian aspect of society, people who have the most money, people who have the most resources, people who have the most anger and resentment at a changing world, to buy in and buy in heavily to a platform that just wants them to be angry all the time.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I sort of hear talk about this, you know, reporters, we always ask the question, like, well, what can be done? And the fundamental issue with Facebook is that, like, Mark Zuckerberg refuses to acknowledge that there's a right and that there's a wrong and that he has a role in establishing a right and the wrong. And because, like you said, Caitlin, nothing is incentivizing him to do the right thing. Like, the reason this has been prevented in other ways with other platforms, to the extent maybe any have had success, is because there's just somebody that's like, no, it's bad if there's pictures of dead bodies on people's feeds in India because we can't catch the language barriers. Like, that means we just, it means we have to, that's bad. That is unequivocally bad, and we do anything to prevent that. But he is, Mark Zuckerberg has always just thrown his hands up and been like, I invite Congress to tell me the difference between right and wrong. It's like, you're a human being. You have an obligation to negotiate in your own mind right versus wrong, just like we all do, unless you're already a robot.
Yeah, it's, well, one of the things that really stuck out to me from what I've seen of the papers, because obviously, like, there's so much that has been released, but it's very clear that Facebook as a company, its values are the same values as Mark Zuckerberg and these sort of, like, I would say, like, centristy neoliberal people who surround him, and they are more concerned with appearing non-biased and appearing like they have created this metaverse thing that Mark Zuckerberg wants and appearing like they've created this amazing tool that can run on its own. They're way more, their value is on making it seem like that. Their value is not on actually preventing their platform from doing harm at all. All they care about is not seeming biased and their bottom line. They do not actually care at all about the harm that their platform does. They only care about it in so much as it will affect their image. And, you know, it's squandered some plans of Mark Zuckerberg's to have his own currency and become the president and stuff. So, like,
I mean, I can't stop thinking about how they invited a bunch of conservative activists like Ben Shapiro and everything. They had dinner. And, like, there was no equivalent dinner for liberals and liberal activists and, like, the NAACP. Like, he doesn't do outreach. He spent hours talking to Ben Shapiro. Yeah. And, yes, like, you kind of get the sense. I mean, a 20-year-old developed a social network to rate the hotness of women. And who could have imagined so many years later would have all gone so wrong? like in some ways, he never started with a good moral path. So it was never going to build up unless somebody stopped him. And at every point of the way, everything about Facebook's development has said fewer morals you have, the less you care about other people, the less you focus on the needs of the vulnerable, the more money you will make. Yeah. And, you know, like, you gotta kind of follow the cash. Mark Zuckerberg was never cool with marginalized people, and he definitely, insulated by his billions of dollars and a lack of congressional, like, any kind of congressional reproach or legal reproach, is very happy. I mean, he'll just drive the entire society into the ground. He'll drive everyone's societies into the ground.
He, like, literally, it doesn't matter to him. He wants to create the metaverse, which I don't know what that is, but I don't want him to create it, and I don't want him to be in charge of it.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to live in it, and I mean, I'm against it 100%. So
I mean, it goes back to what we say all the time, which is that, like, this question of bias is that Republicans are just like, I mean, to say that you don't, for Facebook to say that they don't want to seem biased to Republicans on their platform is like police saying they don't want to be biased, seem biased towards criminals. It's like, these are the people, your job, like, these are the people that are doing the offending thing as a monolith, as a whole. Like, they are, it doesn't, like, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if you feel like you look biased. Take that up with the Republican Party then. Like, take that 100%. Up with them. When Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz ask you to, like, take down a warning on an abortion post, the answer is not, like, how is it unbiased to do it? And I was trying to read, like, it is true that to get engagement on social media, like, the more you invoke the out-group, the better your content will do. But when they looked at how far this pulled liberals and how kind of what incendiary reaction, you know, you have for Republicans and conservatives, misinformation, QAnon, anti-vax stuff, stolen election. The worst they could find for liberals was like Moscow Mitch, which, like, that wasn't that. That was not misinformation. It was just a nickname that he didn't like. Like,
well,
it was satire.
Also, going back to what you were saying about, like, the Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz of it all, we see now through these Facebook papers that Mark Zuckerberg personally and executives at Facebook personally intervened on behalf of conservative misinformation to keep it up because of this mm-hmm. obsession with not seeming biased on multiple occasions. I mean, obviously, we don't know every single thing that's ever been done at the company, but there's nothing, as far as I've seen in these papers, about him saying, personally intervening to say, no, this is a piece of content that needs to come down. Like, mm-hmm. that's the mods do that. But then Mark Zuckerberg, the only times he personally gets involved or Facebook executives personally get involved, it's to keep harmful content up.
This seems to be a frequent. This did come up a lot.
Because they don't want to be seen as bad for taking it down. The stuff that's actually bad hopefully gets caught and it like doesn't have to be a decision that he makes. But the times that he actually uses his influence, it's always on behalf of keeping something up that really shouldn't be there. And that, in a nutshell, shows you what the value actually is.
Yeah, Narendra Modi asks him to keep stuff up, and he does. I mean, this man is extremely dangerous. So let's go to the Carol story, like we say, really points out in a lot of detail how, like, passive the user has to be shuttled towards this offending content. And Facebook has defended itself with this by trying to say that it's just a small percentage of its users that end up exposed to certain content. But like, homeboy, you've got 3 billion users. A small percentage is hundreds of millions of people. We only needed 1,000 people to almost kill all of our representatives. Like, you can't pull the scale argument with me, because you could have slowed down your scale these past 11 years and you chose not to.
Well, exactly. And that's a point that I've heard being made, which is like, it's actually not okay to run a company that you don't have any control of. Like, there's no other, like, you can't just have a company that's like, sorry, it's so big that actually, like, it's really dangerous. It's like, no, you're not. I think it was on Pod Save America, they were saying, like, you can't have a hospital that's like, sorry, the hospital's so big, like, some of the people just aren't going to do bad. Like, some of them were actually going to kill them. Like,
yeah, and it depends. If you don't speak the languages that we know, you might not make it. Like, exactly.
Right, and that's the thing, is, like, they're not moderating basically any content that's not in English or from America, which is why, again, there are millions of people, billions of people who don't speak English, millions in India alone, like, and so much has been able to spread. And it's like, you wouldn't be able to have a company in India that doesn't operate in any of its languages. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But Facebook is able to do that because it's on the internet.
Totally. So let's look at a few more details related to January 6th, and then we'll come back to India and some other countries where they just had some really dangerous failures. So the documents also give a little bit more insight into what was going on at Facebook in the weeks leading up to January 6th. So Facebook had taken some steps prior to the election to stop misinformation, and they acknowledged that its spread and potentially millions of people thinking that Trump had been unfairly denied a second term would be bad. That would cause violence. But I guess they thought that this concern expired at midnight on November 3rd, or when the election was. They let go of some of, they have these things called like break the glass procedures, where they feel like things are just really intense, they need to use them. They do not use these very often. They don't break the glass. They just sort of like gently tap on it mm-hmm. until it breaks over time. And so what they were mainly prepared for, Facebook, was what happened in 2016. So they put up, you know, their biggest guardrails against preventing more of what happened then, foreign influence, Russian interference, as well as potential hacks. But on the night of the election is when these Stop the Steal groups started popping up, and Facebook couldn't remove them quickly enough. They had just grown so big so fast. I don't know if they had already taken their foot off the brakes literally when voting ended, but they definitely did after the election day. They didn't keep in place any of the emergency misinformation or hate speech barriers that it had during the election period. And they also didn't ban the phrase stop the steal. They banned the phrase stop the steal on January 7th. seems a little late.
No! That's the perfect encapsulation of Facebook's like ability to respond or willingness to respond to anyone.
Yep.
That is.
Exactly. And an expert told Politico that, you know, I saw a lot of trying to defend Facebook's what they did on the day of the riot in reaction to the riot. People saying they really did everything they could. But it was their own fault that was not enough. They should have done so much more in the weeks leading up to give themselves a better chance and to prevent even the need to, like, when I think of this, it's like, I literally, all they had to do was plan for what people might be saying. And I have never worked like this, but I would know to do this, to like think of all the phrases people are going to say, all the variations, and make sure they're all blocked. And then the day of, they were like, they had planned for people to say Trump with certain words or phrases, but not he with certain words or phrases, or not Donald with certain words or phrases. It's like, that's the whole job. I think there's, we hear all of this and you tend to think like they must be trying as hard as they can. They're not. Like, I feel like this is the headline. Facebook is not trying as hard as they can. And whenever they are, whenever these issues are brought to their attention, they have excuses. They have, well, we didn't block that keyword, or, well, we started doing all of this after. Another thing it doesn't do anymore is that it says it no longer recommends civic or political groups, because these are often the sources of inflammatory or straight up false information. But it's known that for a very long time. It's known that for a very long time, and that it would shuttle people towards dangerous information. Do you think, for me, sometimes I think their barrier is that they don't think a phrase like stop the steal is bad, because they don't consider that a phrase that incites violence. Is that where they're wrong, that they just like talk themselves out of what inciting violence looks like?
Our whole society has. We are living in the wake, like there was an actual coup. Like, once one side of the government decides to consecrate violence against the other side of the government, you do not live in a functioning state. We are just waiting for the next blow. This is not a functional government. We all know that. We're watching Republicans basically be like, please get sick and die. Get sick and die to make Joe Biden's numbers look bad. Get sick and die all the time. Get sick and die and work to death. Like, literally... Yeah. Setting up structures that we know are, there's still 1,000 people dying a day. We are entering the fall and winter. I'm just really frustrated. And this is post-vaccine. Mm-hmm. This is emotionally, like, if you try to explain this to, like, I always try to figure out, like, where my political positions are based off of whether or not I could explain it to, like, a benevolent alien species. If they were like, we're going to solve all of Earth's problems, but you have to explain where, how you got here. And you can't explain it, then you are, and it's like, but if you fail to explain it to us in a way that makes any kind of sense, you get none of your problem solves. We eliminate humans. And it's like, okay, don't allow conservatives to deal with the aliens, because they will just be like, and then the brown people, and they'll be like, you're all the same. These are just tiny phenotypical differences. So I just feel like we're just in a wild place right now.
How do we
know.
Get Mark Zuckerberg to turn against, like, Republicans and national government? Why does he sympathize? Because some of them are not into this, into him either. Like, just because of the money?
I think it's who he is.
Yeah.
It's who he is at his core. He's a rich kid from Harvard who invented a thing, and his
He didn't even invent it.
Like, well, yeah, that's also true. Who stole a thing from those hot twins, as we know.
I feel like I was, in my head, I was comparing. I felt this way yesterday, and now I feel less charitable. But, like, Facebook kind of reminds me of Erica Jane. You watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Because she keep, like... Even if Erica Jane can claim she did not know what terrible shit was happening, if she's like, I didn't know that he was doing this, that my husband, who I was, so I didn't know that this was happening. Even if she had no idea, or let's say even if she did, but at the time she was like, she was only concerned about herself and chose not to act. The only acceptable thing for Erica Jane to be doing at this moment is falling on her feet, begging for forgiveness, begging to be part of the solution, throwing whatever money she has at the problem. But no, she's just like defiant and is like, why are you coming after me? I think that that is what Mark Zuckerberg is doing.
Yes. And first of all, that's a perfect analogy. And I just want to say, to add to it, that that means if Erica is Mark Zuckerberg, then the algorithm is Tom Girardi.
That's what I, yeah. Sammy said that Tom was, like, Facebook.
Don't blame
But I think
Tom could also be Facebook, but I feel like the algorithm is what they, it's like, it's the algorithm.
Yeah.
I don't know. exactly. The algorithms up right. to.
Go ask the algorithm.
It's not my fault that the algorithm robbed all of those victims of a plane crash.
We got it. We nailed it.
Even more infuriating is that, like, Mark Zuckerberg's argument for being a billionaire is that he earned somehow this money, but then he also is not responsible for any of the apparatus that actually keeps him rich. Mm-hmm. So he's there being like, I just accidentally got billions of dollars from this thing that I don't even pay attention to. It's not my fault, you guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just let me keep my many, 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 many billions of dollars and continue destroying the country and multiple other countries. And, like, you know, we had the WhatsApp go down and we learned, you know, for people who are in the United States, we learned, like, that's not just a social app. That is, like, the only way some people can contact each other in other countries because Facebook has entered and monopolized space. Like, this is really, really toxic. It's really corrosive. And it's a really corrosive company. And we should rein it in. Like, not only rein it in, but actively build in safeguards that say, like, this is a society we want. We don't want people launching violent attacks against lawmakers. We think that that's
bad. And we
bad.
Will do everything in our power to stop it. That right. is bad. Not like, oh, I don't know. There's nothing we can do. There's plenty you can do. And I think their argument of, like, bias and the arguments that they try to use in terms of, like, situating Facebook and the U.S. political process sort of fall apart when you look at what they do in other countries, because these same issues are happening and they have different binaries. Like, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg can really be like, well, you know, because I have lunch with, like, they just, when you look at what they let happen in other countries, you really realize they do not care about people. They care even less about non-American people. So internal documents also did, like, a Carol's Journey type test for a woman in India. It was Facebook researchers creating a profile for a 21-year-old girl who lived in northern India when they wanted to see what her user experience would be like. At the time, it was shortly before an election, and there was a lot of violence in Kashmir that Prime Minister Modi was hoping to capitalize on politically. Again, with no action on her part, she didn't do anything. She was like a passive user. Facebook did not know much about her at all. Her feed flooded with images of dead bodies paired with hateful and anti-Muslim rhetoric. You're right if you think this is stuff that would never come up on an American user's feed. So it's very confusing why dead bodies were coming up on an Indian user's feed.
Yeah.
An internal...
On an American user's feed, like, post a nipple. Post one nipple and see how fucking fast that comes down.
Right. And this is because...
But we can't get dead bodies off the feed in India?
Exactly. And that might be because either the language it was posted in, Facebook wasn't picking up, or the languages that the hate groups were posting in, it was not picking up and blocking them. And Facebook employees based in India also noticed that the same thing happening to them. So this was just, like, happening. This wasn't just like, oh, what a weird user experience for this one thing we need to tweak. And so these internal documents, they show that Facebook knew this was happening. They were well aware that its moderation was weaker in non-English speaking countries, which made it especially vulnerable to abuse by bad actors and authoritarian regimes. It's very funny to me that they position this as, like, wouldn't it be terrible if Facebook helped an authoritarian regime in another country? It's like, that happened 5 hours from where I'm sitting. We speak English.
We have evidence from Myanmar.
It did that.
We have evidence from multiple places that, like, Facebook, Philippines, Myanmar, these are both countries, India. Like, we have enough evidence, you guys. Like, at some point, this kind of, like, well, we can't be 100% sure. Like, we know what's happening. Like, stop lying to us. And there's a certain amount of like, credibility that, like, we should be way past the credibility line right now. Like, that we're beyond the moral event horizon.
Yeah.
These people know what they're doing. They understand what they're doing. Please be careful Googling moral event horizon, because you will end up on TV Tropes and I can't guarantee you'll ever leave. We know that they are doing terrible things, and for some reason we're all here kind of being like, but if we force them to stop, like, does that make us the monsters? I think that's why they've been kind of arguing really heavily, is because, like, okay, so where do you put the line? And it's like, we are not arguing over whether there should be a line. This is not they conflate that by saying, like, well, once you impose a line, you are saying certain things. It's like, you already are talking about a line. There's certain things that we all agree should not be happening. So now we should be having a debate about where to place it. And it's very clear that you can't be trusted to place it where it should be.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like that captures it. That captures it perfectly.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
So in 2019, like you said, a high-ranking official told employees, and I think this quote just captures everything you just said, was, quote, "The painful reality is that we simply can't cover the entire world with the same level of support." And the reaction is, then don't go there. Do not operate in countries that are unstable, where you cannot provide resources and you cannot catch hateful content. In 2020, Facebook dedicated 84% of its misinformation resources to the United States, even though we only make up 10% of the platform's users. And the remaining 16% was earmarked, quoted in the papers for, quote, "the rest of the world." And I just feel like that turn of phrase is so telling. Like, they just are like, there's America, who they're barely serving well, and they're
But America can regulate them in a way that would cause them problems. So that's why they give, because they operate in America. So that's why they give the tiniest fuck about us and the EU a little bit, because we could cause them problems. But everywhere else, it's a free for all. And it's crazy because it's like, again, if a company was like, sorry, our planes don't work in India, then it's like, you can't fly the plane.
Right, our planes are more dangerous in India. They're more likely to crash, and you could get hurt.
Yeah, because of, I don't know, something in the climate, they're more likely to just kind of fall apart in the sky. Then you cannot operate there.
Right.
Like, you don't.
And they would say, regulators would say, okay, well, then you need to sort of tweak the plane so that it has something so it can more safely operate here. And they're just like, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that.
And I mean, India, there's an enormous number of people. They speak many, many languages. I understand why Facebook can't operate in India, but Facebook needs to stop operating in India then.
That's why I would love to operate in India. Or I can't.
Exactly. I'd love to do the podcast in Hindi, but I can't because I don't speak that language. So we don't do the podcast.
Right. What if we put our podcast in Google Translate and just published it? And we're like, that'll work.
That's basically, that would be good. That would really be it.
That's basically, I think they have done that. I think they have used Google Translate before to translate things. And then they're like, this is so weird. How come everybody in this region of India is incited against Muslims? That's so weird. And what makes this even more shocking is that because India is so big, and as so many users, relatively, Facebook is actually investing a lot in there, which just shows you how little they're investing other places. I mean, the issue has proved even worse and more dangerous in places like Pakistan, Ethiopia, and Myanmar, where the algorithms were chiefly, this issue comes up a lot, unable to identify hate speech or misinformation in commonly used languages. Just as I'm thinking of this, it's like, what an easy way to like create jobs in those places. Like, translation is something you can teach people. After a UN report connected Facebook to an actual genocide in Myanmar, the company did dedicate more attention and resources to that region ahead of a 2020 election there, and it worked pretty well. They had some success. But employees note that Facebook only dedicated this attention after the UN said it was responsible for a literal genocide. And if it's going to take a literal genocide everywhere before Facebook, or a coup, before Facebook is willing to operate safely, which I don't even think they've had that reaction here, then we're all in for a really messy lifetime.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of banning Stop the Steal on January 7th. Mm. It's like, oops, we already incited a genocide, so I guess we'll do something. And it's like, I mean, the options are either stop operating in countries you can't operate in, or put your money where your mouth is. They reported $9 billion in earnings just this week from last quarter and actually operate in all of these countries. If that's what you want, if you want to create a metaverse and be the ruler of the world, then yeah, you got to put like actual outposts in all these countries and you got to get people who learn all the languages and you're going to have to put a lot of money down. But they don't want to do either of those things. They want to just get the money they can from operating without even having like a basic outpost of, you know, like
Google
the United
Translate.
States has embassies.
I was thinking
places.
Yeah.
Like if you really want to do this and you want to be this arbiter of the world and operate everywhere, then you have to actually operate everywhere. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, get the hell out.
Yeah. And it's really important that I think it's really important that the United States, our government, seriously and meaningfully respond to this. This was an attack against our government, and it's very clear that without the United States taking lead on what is legally enforceable for internet companies, for social media, for all of this new media that we've developed, like if they don't set some fucking guidelines, it is going to continue. It is in our hands, literally, to save other people around the world by putting limitations on Facebook domestically that have to be replicated whenever they enter another country.
Right, because if they don't face any repercussions for the role that they played or any regulations, I mean, why would they take any of the guidance that we're offering if they can just Google
and
translate
trade rules can be used
Bengali
both ways, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So government, you can totally. Do it. I believe in you. Kind of.
On that.
Just Democrats,
exactly.
Really.
Oh, I can't. I love this 45 minutes where we can chat and not have to click on the trending term Joe Manchin until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Berg.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.